charge you guys to continue this theme. Honestly, I think it's a gift to the industry. I loved your post that 2024 should be the year of unreasonable hospitality.
All right, welcome back, Scott. How's it going?
I was torn. Do I pretend that we didn't record yesterday? I don't think I can. So we recorded yesterday and we fit this one in, and I think for a lot of great reasons. So Ashley reached out and said, hey, can we talk? Right. She's listened to the podcast. And I said, hey, instead of talking, we can still talk, but let's just do it straight on a podcast episode. Right. What better way to do it? Excited about this one. And Ashley was excited to get on, and we were excited to have her. So we squeezed this one in. So we're ready. I'm ready. I'm just as good as I was yesterday, and I'm ready to have another good one here.
I noticed that Paul and I did a recording. He was on vacation on the other podcast that I do, and we were talking about the Super Bowl that hadn't happened at that time. Then it dropped this morning. Obviously, the Super Bowl had happened, but our prediction was right, or our assumption was right. Sometimes the listener, it's time travel. You're listening to a capsule in time that may have occurred a week or two ago, and just enjoy it. It'll be a good conversation. But Adam, how are you doing? Anything fun and exciting happened since yesterday?
I'll ramble a little bit, as I like to do at the beginning. And I'm a believer that, yes, the time capsule is the only way for us to do this. And especially because we're getting far enough ahead that we can't not talk about things that are going to be relevant once this comes out. It just is what it is. But obviously not much of a sports update necessarily in just one day. But I'll share a couple of thoughts and correlate a little bit with sports, because I've been thinking about it. I think that creating is really important. I think it's important for everybody. I think it's important for us individually, as businesses, as an industry. We need to look for opportunities and then figure out how do we take action and create something. And Zach on yesterday's discussion mentioned that too. If you see an opportunity, go after it, because 9 out of 10 people won't go after it. And I started to think about that yesterday. The kids were out of school because of the wind, but I made sure that we kept that soccer practice because I had a lot of my mind I wanted to get across to the boys. They didn't really have a great game on Saturday. So I wanted to make sure that I got to reinforce that work ethic piece that we talked about yesterday. Conrad had shared the link to the Tiger video, and I really wanted to talk with them about that and then start to touch on some things and expectations that I really want them to have. And as I was going through practice, I started to correlate this back to the podcast. And then people talk about this with entrepreneurs. Great entrepreneurs are really just scratching their own itch. And it's similar to writing. When you write, it almost forces you to think about things. So writing isn't necessarily getting your ideas out. It's forcing you to process thoughts and then put them on paper. I think the podcast is the same way. It forces me to start to think about things a little bit differently and draw some correlations across things. So as I was going through practice yesterday, I was thinking about this and the discussion we were going to have. And I started to realize that what I'm really doing as the coach is building standards for these boys, right? I'm trying to help them understand what work ethic is. And I use Tiger as that example. And to catch everybody up, the example was that Tiger Woods, being the best golfer of all time, naturally talented, still puts in work to touch the ball 1,000 times per day. That's an insane amount. But if you think of that standard, if you start to try to emulate that and live up to it, you get much closer to what greatness would be. Now, again, standards have levels, and you got to make sure that we're not all going to be Tiger. And Tiger, you could argue, look at his world outside of golf, and maybe he should have focused on some other things. So we've got to figure out what those standards are. And as I went through practice further, I started to realize I'm teaching the boys what terminology to use on the soccer field. I'm teaching the boys where to stand. I'm teaching them how to pass. That's where my focus was. What are the options for passing? So as I went through it, I started to recognize actually what I'm doing is building the standards and the expectations every time I talk with them. And at the end of every practice, and I go through the similar things in practice, we start with some warm-ups, we start with some drills, and eventually at the end of practice, we get to a scrimmage. Ultimately, everybody wants to play, and that's where I want to be too. I want everybody to play. I don't get them enough, so I think that playing is important because that's game speed. So once you build the standards, you then need to go out into the field and actually exercise those standards, and you need to do it at game speed because you need to figure out where the standards break and how do you fix them. As I started to think about today's discussion with Ashley, that's really what Ashley was coming to us. As Scott mentioned, she was reaching out to us to talk about this. Ashley's coming to this from the perspective of where are the standards in the vacation rental industry? And we've touched on this a number of times on this podcast. This industry, one of the huge drawbacks in this industry that's slowing everybody down is that lack of standards. And I don't know how to define it. I'm really interested in what Ashley's thesis here is. She's the first guest that actually shared some research with us prior to the call. So I'm very interested to get her perspective and dig into it. But I can assure you that all of us on the call are wholeheartedly aligned that standards is something that this industry needs, and we need them as soon as we can.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, a lot of things there. I had a very short soccer career. I don't think we've talked about this, Adam. It was middle school only. And then I got onto other sports and other things. But I remember our coach, one thing that he did in the scrimmages is that he would take the best player and let everybody else gang up on him because he would get a little ego driven. He was the best player and he knew it. Everybody knew it on the team. So he'd take the second, third, fourth, fifth best players and put them on a team and then put the best player with the worst player and see how they could coexist together. And he would lose and he wasn't used to losing. He came over from actually another country and he was like, oh man, like I'm actually losing here. Learn how to be a better teammate. He was just hogging the ball and taking every shot and stuff like that. And it actually helped him a lot. And I think he had a pretty successful like high school career. And I think he went on to college. And I always wonder, was it that middle school scrimmage that we beat him somehow, even though we shouldn't have, that actually put that fire into him? So I'm sure he would have been successful either way, but a little lesson to learn there. And it sounds like that's what you're doing too a little bit. So that's always fun. But yeah, Ashley, welcome. We appreciate you having you here. And thanks for fitting us into the busy schedule. This is a bonus episode for us, but I think it'll be a good one to have. The listener may not know you. We've talked a little bit, but I don't know you that either, being honest there as well. So if you don't mind, could you give a little background about you and Haven, what you're doing? And then we also need a song that best describes you so we can add it into our Spotify playlist.
Yeah. So hi, I'm Ashley Ching, founder and CEO of InHaven, which is a professional procurement solution for the vacation rental industry. I've spent my career in procurement and sourcing. A majority of my career was at Tiffany & Company. I went all over the world with them. And most recently was at the Home Depot, where I was the head of merchandising for the company store, one of their private label brands in the home textile space. Like Adam, I have four young kids. So when we travel, we spend a lot of time in vacation rentals. That's our choice when we travel. We need multiple bedrooms. My husband likes more than one bathroom, and we prefer a kitchen. And as I was traveling to these vacation rentals, we'd find the places on places like Airbnb, OTAs. The places would look good, the pictures look good, the location's perfect, but we would show up more often than not to really terrible quality beds, missing pots and pans, the things that you can't touch or feel in pictures. And it was really disappointing. And it really left a bad mark on the overall vacations that we were having. And so I, as a person who sources products as a living, I'm naturally curious, how do these vacation rental hosts and property managers source products for these homes? And in speaking with them, overwhelmingly, the response was, it's an absolute nightmare. My staff is constantly running out to various stores. Prices are changing, availability changes. It takes up way too much of my time when I want to be focused on really value-added services like on the guest. And they said, replenishing is an absolute nightmare. I get text messages or phone calls from my housekeeping team saying, dish is broken in home 1, 2, 3. And you're scratching your head. What dishes did I put in that home? Where? And then you end up with a lot of mixed inventory. So it's just really not working. And so this really piqued my interest because being in the hospitality or in the home furnishing industry, I understand all the manufacturers. And they have two different businesses, right? They have their retail business. So the products they sell to the Walmarts, Amazons, Macy's of the world. And then they have their hotel line businesses. So these are hospitality grade, commercial grade products that are really just available to the hotels. And so I started to talk to my supplier base to say, look, we've got this huge growing industry in the vacation rental space. How can we bring those hospitality grade products to the vacation rental space to improve on the quality of the products in these homes and make it really easy for these homeowners and property managers to purchase? They loved it. They've been trying to access this industry for many years, but it's so highly fragmented. So we really partnered together to make products that typically were available to the large hotel chain. So let's say a hotel chain, let's take Sheetz as an example, they would buy like 3,000 queen fitted sheets or flat sheets. And how do we break down those case pack quantities, make them much more digestible for property managers that might only manage 20 homes or 20 properties? It's been a great experience thus far. We've worked really closely with our professional property managers to develop new tools and services. That's what we're here for in Haven. We really help our professional property managers set those standards. So we take the time, figure out what type of quality to they want in their homes. We break everything down, good, better, best, or what we call basic, mid, premium, and luxury. And then once we help them define those standards, we set up a landing page for them on InHaven so they can communicate those standards not only to their internal teams, but their homeowners. So let's say a glass breaks, they know exactly what glass they need to replace. And then we've made it really easy. We've recently rolled out technology for the housekeeping teams to really quickly identify things that are missing within each of those properties or need to be replenished, and they can send a purchase order for those items. So we really focus on just the bed, bath, and kitchen. That's our focus. We want to standardize that experience. We don't feel like guests are looking for creative experiences within the bed, bath, and kitchen, right? right? You want the rectangular bed, you want good sheets, you want to sleep well, you're not looking for the round mattress or a water bed. And those are the areas of the home we feel that are foundations to the stay, the comfort of the stay. If a guest has a bad sleep experience, they can't enjoy the gathering spaces or the places that you set up outdoors. If we can create more certainty and consistency around the bed, bath, and kitchen, that's what we're here for.
Awesome. That makes sense. A lot of threads to pull on there. But before we keep going on the question, three, two, Ashley.
Yeah. Okay. Song that best describes me. I'm going to go with a Taylor Swift song because she's an awesome female, being a female founder in the industry. And I'm going to go with Welcome to New York. As I mentioned, I have traveled around the world. I've lived in England, Italy, spent 5 years in Hong Kong, traveling Asia. My dad's from Australia, so I spent a lot of time there. I feel that there's no city like New York City. I love the optimism, the energy, the creativity, and it just really inspires me. That's my song for you guys. That's
awesome. Nice. I like it. I, despite her popularity, is that the first Taylor Swift song? I feel like it might be.
It is. 100%
of
it.
Yeah.
Nice. You got a Swiftie here.
Yeah, there you go, Ashley. You broke the anti-Swiftie curse. Luckily, we didn't get canceled up until then. You got to be careful going against the Swifties. They will. I saw a quote tweet the other day, and it was something to the effect of, I'm terrified tweeting this because I know they'll find my social security number. They, of course, referring to the fact that there's these fans that will do anything for Taylor Swift. But awesome. Like it. Also, first one in a minute that I've known, so that's good. We've gone in some different directions recently, and I've just been nodding along but not really knowing the song at all. So that's one at least that I recognize. Awesome. New York City. Maybe we'll come back to that. But in Haven, perhaps a little bit more relevant for the discussion today. Yeah, I think I was going to go down this path. Is the fact that we're fragmented a feature or a bug? Meaning the fact we've talked a lot. Adam has talked the most probably on this show about scale. How can our industry scale? It doesn't really seem, I don't really know if we've answered the question yet. 50 odd episodes, 60 odd episodes in. I don't know if we have the right answer. But the industry is so fragmented. Is it possible that there's going to be a layer of standards that's underneath it? Or is it just impossible to get Adam and the Outer Banks to agree on what he's going to do in Bed Bath & Kitchen and Conrad in Myrtle Beach to do the same thing and John Doe in San Diego and whoever in Texas? I guess that's the question mark is like, is the fragmented nature a good thing for our industry or a bad thing for our industry when we're trying to do what you're trying to do, which is get everyone on the same page or at least on some level of scale, like 1, 2, 3, 4 level scale? How do you think through that problem?
Yeah, so I really think that the industry has grown significantly over the last 10 years, and consistency and quality have become a huge issue for the industry. And I think there are people like me that will always want to travel to vacation rentals, but how can we create more certainty for that guest when they're booking, that they know there's 25,000 vacation rental property managers in the U.S. So it's really hard to tell as you travel across the country, you know, what you're going to get and what to expect. But Inhaven's here to help those property managers set those standards. And I think we can collectively create standards around the bed, bath, and kitchen, which doesn't take away from the uniqueness of the property at all. But it just says you're going to be guaranteed a great night's sleep, a great bathing experience, and a fully stocked kitchen wherever you go in the U.S. if you stay in one of these properties. And I think that's completely achievable. And this is, I spent a lot of time, I sent you guys some research. This is not very different from where the hotel industry was 30, 40 years ago, right? There was, if we look at the hotel industry in the 70s and 80s, cars became much more affordable from a technology perspective. So people could afford cars and they could travel. At the same time, the U.S. government was investing in this interstate highway system. And so you've got all these hotels, motels popping up along the highway system. And at that point, that's when the guest was really challenged with quality and certainty issues. And in the 90s, that's when you saw a bunch of hotels get together and really start to set these standards. The Westin Heavenly Bed, it's a very simple innovation, but really was a game changer for the industry, where sleep no longer was a luxury. It was a standard. Like good sleep was a good standard. And so it's these small changes that the hotel industry made with these standards that really have allowed the industry to scale to where it is today. And I think that's completely achievable from a vacation rental perspective as well.
Yeah.
Go ahead, Scott.
Conrad, I'm going to jump in here for a second because Ashley's touching on a couple of things. She's touching on one truth that's very personal, and that is Lauren, my sister-in-law that's at Ohio State University, she gets her white envelope in March. And the idea is I can only go for one day, so I'm just bouncing in and out. But everyone else started booking hotels. And Ange looked at me the other day, and she's like, I can't stay in a hotel with these kids, right? And you just look at that moment and go, that's all we used to know. But Ashley hit on something that I hadn't really considered, right? And we've talked about this over and over, hotels versus us. The only place we're truly competing with hotels is in bed and bath. right? Like, let's not overcomplicate this with ourselves, right? We're competing with them on bed and bath. And Ashley's coming to say, okay, we're going to match them right there, bed and bath. We're going to take them head on. So then if you just get the kitchen, you're well on your way. And that is probably one of the truest things we've said on this podcast, right? Is that's the hook. Bed and bath, let's match them and let's at least have the standards that everyone can expect in a hotel because those feel good. But then we address the kitchen and really that takes the guest experience a really long way. Now, the only other factor that I wrote down, and actually I didn't catch it, so I apologize, is your standards, right? You said basic, mid. What was the one after mid?
So it goes basic, mid, premium, and luxe.
Got it.
And think about the hotel chains, right? The chain scale. You've got luxury, which is about 2% of demand. And then you've got upscale, mid-scale, economy. Yeah. And you as a consumer, me as a guest, I choose different types of hotels for the different purposes, right? So if I'm in the middle of Pennsylvania in a soccer tournament with my son, I'm fine staying at the Econo Lodge, right? I just need a bed to sleep on and a warm breakfast in the morning. If I travel for work and I stay at a hotel, I stay at a Marriott. I need a desk, good Wi-Fi, front desk service, all that stuff. And then if I'm on a honeymoon, maybe I'll stay at a Four Seasons. What we wanted to offer when we think about the product offering for the bed, bath, and kitchen, it's not just one standard across the whole vacation rental industry. It's we've really scaled it so that if you're staying at a $100 a night place, you get a certain level of quality. Now it's all going to be quality, right? There's quality beds and baths at those standards, but you're not necessarily paying up for the Supima cotton sheets and towels that you would expect at a luxury hotel. And so we've positioned our assortment along that chain scale as well.
Yeah. And we've touched on this and it feels recent because that's the other reality is if we're just true and real with the guests and we say, hey, this is a mid home, right? Or a mid property. So it gets the mid standards. And then we tell everyone, this is a mid property and why. Just think of how far we've come. That's miles from where we are.
And even within, and I look at, we have lots of customers that have large portfolios. Let's say you have 100 homes in your portfolio. Not every home is luxury mid. We have the Inhaven Lux assortment for the 20 homes. We have the Inhaven Core assortment. We work with our property managers to help differentiate their own portfolios so that they can better communicate to their guest the expectations that they will receive when they get there.
And then we need a Conrad to then say, okay, now let's put that in the copy and just set all the right expectations right here, right now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think one thing too, in the copy is like a lot of property managers that we work with try to like stuff as much in there as possible, right? Certainly on the listing description, they feel like that's their time. That's my time to shine, right? Like I'm going to go and put a million words in there. And so that's one take that I see. And I felt like the actual outcome there is usually not always the best because it just goes in a million different directions. Like they're saying that they can do a million things. They want to know about the property. What can I not see in the photos? I think you did nail it a minute ago, Ashley, when you were saying the photo, I can't really tell if the bed's any good or not. I'm sure it's well-made and the photo is going to look professional. We're going to have a photographer out there and it's going to be sharp from a clarity perspective, but there could be bricks under there under that blanket for all I know, right? Until I get on there and actually experience it. I was actually going to go your way, Scott, for a second and ask, how do you do this at TAN? You got 1200 units, multiple countries now, right? Not just even the US. And obviously there's a lot of geographic diversity. If I go stay in a TAN unit in Myrtle Beach, am I going to get the same experience as I stay in a TAN unit somewhere else in this bed, bath, and kitchen concept like Ashley's talking about?
Yeah. So it took us years to fix it, right? It wasn't fast. We were very offbeat in that area. And we were offbeat in that area two different ways. And one way we haven't even talked about, but it's relevant, is every year TAN used to do campaigns, right? So we would go through and say, okay, this year we're doing flooring, right? This year's a flooring campaign year, right? So what we would do is go through and do all of the flooring in every unit, right? Or we would go through and paint it, right? We just one thing, but we would take that thing all the way through. All that we were doing is essentially having a unit that was partially done at all times, right? So we had to first address that and we adopted, I was fairly new. I think it was my first year as president of TAN. So it was March 2017. Where we changed it, Conrad, and said, all right, the rule is when you open that door to do a renovation, it's a full renovation, and then you close the door. So that unit's completely done. And Conrad, to your question, that's when we said, and these are the standards by which we operate. This is what a living room TV size is. This is what a bedroom TV size is. And then we use all of the same vendors, Conrad. So one of we all use the same people that deliver the same stuff, because for a lot of years that wasn't the case, right? Everyone functioned on their own and just met their own local needs, but it was painful.
The TV thing is a rat's nest. I have a property manager that I worked with who I stayed with them. You guys were at the house, the one down in Florida that we were staying at for VRMA. And he had, I think it was Samsung was like his brand of choice, if memory serves correctly. So we had the same Samsung TV in every single living room. But going to the homeowner who might have an 80-inch TV in there already, yeah, we're taking out your LG, we're putting in a Samsung. He was like, I think those were some awkward conversations to have potentially. Like, this is the standard. But then when he gets a ticket or like in the guidebooks and things like that, I think he was using the Guess Who guide. It was like, then he could be consistent. Like, here's how the TV works, because this same TV in every unit. Now, technology, it seems like, is a rat's nest, actually, that you're not touching. Bed Bath and Kitchen typically doesn't involve a TV. But yeah, that's like, yeah, when you start to get in the details on this stuff, especially across 100 homes, like you were saying earlier, you can make a case like, should we put the Sony high-end Bravia TV in the nice house? And should we put like the budget Walmart TV in the low-end house? Like, you could make that argument. So it's tricky to get to the right outcome. Adam, I was going to get your direction. You've been inside of these companies that have worked at companies that have had 500 units, and you've also worked with many of them over the years, more on the technology side, obviously. But how do you, what's the best way of doing that? Do you have to have a standard? And if you're trying to scale, do you just have to accept like some are going to be these mids, some are going to be lux, and you just take them as they come? Or do you, what's the best way you think to approach that with regards to, I booked with company XYZ and I got a different outcome this year than last year because I booked a different quality of home? How do you communicate that?
I am in line with everything we're talking about. And I think that there is an exceptional need to make this happen. Now, the drawback to that is I'm also a little bit jaded, having been in this industry for 16 plus years, to say there's been a lot of great ideas and a lot of energy behind great ideas that don't get executed, whether they fall apart in the planning phase or they fall apart in the execution phase. What we're talking about is not easy. There's no easy way to do this, not within a company, not within an area, not within an industry. And that's where my head goes with some of these discussions. Conrad, I think you can, within a company, I think you can control it. To Scott's point, in the way that he described it at TAN, I think you can control it. It's going to take strong communication with the homeowners, because ultimately that is where some of this communication falls apart. Homeowner wants the TV, homeowner wants the sheets, homeowner wants the tiles, whatever it might be. You've got to be able to draw that line and say, we're the experts. You chose us as the experts. This is how we need to execute so that we're professional, so that your guests get great guest experience. I'm still a believer that great guest experience is serving the homeowner, not just the guest. So we need to give a great guest experience. So I think that's the discussion on the homeowner side. The bigger discussion, I think, is how do we do this as an industry? And Ashley, I know Inhaven is taking a large step in the direction of making this happen. But that's also where I get a little jaded with ideas is, okay, but reality, like, how are we going to get people to understand what needs to be done? How are we going to get people to actually believe in this and execute in the same way? And that goes back to your point at the beginning, Conrad. Is the fragmentation a bug, or is that something that is quality? And I think there's both sides of that. I think that there's always a pro and a con, and there's a balance somewhere in the middle. We've got to have unique stays. That's what Ashley is driving towards. And I love the fact that you're only focused on bed, bath, and kitchen. I think that makes tremendous sense. Now we're talking about things that we can actually get on the same page about. We're not talking about technology. We're not talking about outside. We're not talking about your living room. Focus on the things that are important for the stay. I think that's a strong step in the right direction. Now, how do we get this message out to everybody? And then how do we get people to use the same materials? And the first one that always comes to everybody's mind, at least the people who have been in the industry for a while, is, well, Verma's got to get behind this and do this. Again, jaded, I don't think that Verma is the organization that changes this, unless somehow we get someone who's pushing these ideas like Ashley and Inhaven to truly get things across the line and make it happen. I just don't think Verma has the understanding or the power to push an industry the way that it truly needs to be pushed.
I think professional property managers is the way that we need to start. Really getting back, we've got professional property managers. Airbnb has done a lot of good things, right, in terms of raising awareness to vacation rental space, but the professional property managers have gotten lost. And you don't know when you go on an OTA whether you're staying at a professionally managed home or just an individual host home. There's no differentiation. And I really think that if you think about the way that the hotel industries have been able to build these brands, it's all about the partnership that they have with these local property managers. And the local property managers are the ones that define service and hospitality, right? You need those good partners. So it's finding, and to your point, Adam, maybe it's the Verma, but finding those, that group of professional property managers that really want to create more consistent stays and elevate the guest experience, and partnering with them. It's not the people that are still going to Dollar General store to shop for their homes, won't spend more than $2 per pillow. I talk to these people all the time. It's really these people that care about that guest experience and want to see this industry scale and want to take back the ownership of this industry.
It's funny, Ashley. So do you have a way, or have you considered a way to value the ROI, right? So is there a way for us to look and say, because this is the crux, right? So yesterday we had a 2019er on, and Zach was just incredible. Like, probably one of my top five podcasts, but that was our moment, because we're critical of the 2019ers because they're coming in. They're all just doing their thing and they're trying to figure out, and they've figured it out. Mm-hmm. It's easier than what we made it, but that's our rub with them, as we look and go, yeah, but we want to do it right. And doing it right means having standards. So do you have any type of research, Ashley, that would say, here's the return on investment for standardizing Bed Bath & Kitchen?
We do. So we have the initial setup costs, because you're buying everything wholesale, right? So you're saving in general you're saving on average at least 25% by just the initial setup, and then that reoccurring, all the consumables that you need to buy and the linen replacements and whatnot. Then there's the time efficiency. So we've been able to calculate out how much time you're saving annually by not having team members run out to all these stores and carry things back and forth. And then in the properties that have implemented these In Haven standards, we're seeing at least a 5% increase in occupancy, and an average, we've seen upwards of like 15% increase in ADRs without impacting occupancy at all. Just by having these beautiful white beds and upgrading their pictures, they're attracting a lot more people to these homes.
When you showed the picture in your slide deck you sent us of the, what was the bed? It was the Westin one, the Heavenly bed. Was that the one?
Yep, exactly. Yeah.
You mentioned that happened in the 90s, but I was like, that holds up today. I looked at that picture and I'm like, I want to sleep in that bed if I was traveling somewhere.
Exactly. It's just very simple changes that you have to make. Right. And consumers are, obviously, you guys talk about this all the time, are becoming way more discerning. Mm-hmm. And as they go and experience the vacation rental industry, they want the uniqueness that the vacation rental industry offers, these unique homes and these unique experiences, but they want that certainty of a hotel in terms of the quality of sleep and bathing. And I do believe the hotel space, while kitchens aren't less important, one out of every three hotel being developed this year in the US is an extended stay hotel. So they are starting to break into this space. I think the offerings are very different, but something that they are paying attention to, and they are investing in these extended stay hotels. Yeah, and they all talk about the backing of the trust of the brands. Stay with Hilton. Mm. We have the brand, you can't trust the stuff that you find on these OTAs. So
yeah. Mm-hmm. Sorry, Ashley, because one, right, I would love to take on that argument, because I think we win that argument every day, all day, right? Because you look at that, and we all know, when you say extended stay, we all know what we think, and that is run down, who's staying there, it's people that need to find a place to live, right? Or it's a bunch of people working. Yep. That they can never, the hotel can never truly compete with us in extended stay, because of that that extended stay name comes with baggage. Mm-hmm. And we can beat them on that baggage.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's a positioning thing too, isn't it, Scott, ultimately? Where it's like, where you're positioning the property, the way that the property is photographed, the setting of it, all those things come into play. I think you're right. There's always going to be that stink, for lack of a better term, on some of those properties. But to your point, Ashley, they're appealing, I'm sure, from an investment perspective, because they're making money. And that's something we've talked about too, right? Are you in this to make money? Is this purely we talked with Zach about the fact that he was recapping this wealth generating conference. That was that's literally the topic of the conference that we were talking about at a high level. And I don't really know a lot of people there, but that seems like a very different frame than like our show and like what we talk about, which is, yes, there's money to be made here, but it's more about hospitality. It's more about taking care of the guest. I feel like those are slightly at odds at times, right? Powering through and just driving these massive returns. Maybe that's what an extended hotel does, but is that actually what the guest wants, to have a great stay and to think that was pleasant? Like, they drive home, they think that was awesome. Not, yeah, I'm homeless and I need somewhere to stay for a week. That's not really the market that we're serving, needless to say. We had Jeff on a while ago, Ashley, from Host GPO. And I guess I'm curious how your approach compares to his. It seems like he's a lot more comprehensive, for lack of a better term. You mentioned that you're a little bit more focused on those three things. Maybe it's a competitor, maybe it's not. Maybe you could just educate the listener on the difference between those two.
Yeah, we are quite different. We are really focused on the standardization, and we are really a one-stop shop. So everything is on In Haven, and you only talk to Inhaven people. So we don't send you off if you run standard textile sheets to standard textiles. So you're really just talking to our team, and we are really a partner. So we create those assortments. We set up those landing pages for you. We set up all your properties according to the assortment that we've agreed on. And then it makes it really easy for your housekeeping teams to replenish. So there's a lot of operational efficiencies that you gain within Inhaven. And again, we're just really primarily focused on, we're not focused on design. We're very focused on setting standards for the Bed Bath & Kitchen. So it is quite different.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely a different approach. The other question I was going to have as we were going through that bit is we've talked, I think maybe at a high level, about this idea that there's a Michelin star. And I think the 100 Collection is trying to do that in vacation rentals. The idea that like you would get this top award, that 2% of demand that you were talking about earlier, Ashley, with Lux Properties. Is that what we need though? Like where it's like, I'm thinking of AAA, where it's, this is a AAA diamond property. This is a gold property, that sort of thing. Should there be some kind of physical reminder? Maybe when I walk into the property, I see like an Inhaven logo or a badge or a standard or something like that. Cause I guess that's the tricky part too, is we can say whatever we want in the copy, going back to that note from Scott a little while ago, I can write in, you know, words and put in the page anything I want, but it's, is there some kind of independent third party? Maybe we talked about VRMA. Could it be Inhaven? Could there be an Inhaven standard list that someone would get some sort of attribute for? How would you approach that? That idea.
I think our long-term vision is really to be play in the soft brand space, where I was recently in London and I stayed in a hotel called the Xenia Hotel. So you've got the local property, it's named the Xenia Hotel. And the reason I booked it is it's an autographed collection. So it's under the Marriott umbrella. So I know I'm going to get the Marriott standards, but get the local experience at the Xenia Hotel. So ideally, as we grow and we standardize with all of our property managers, it could be an option for them to say it's an Inhaven mid scale collection or an Inhaven Lux collection. So they know they're going to this local establishment, but you've got that reminder of the brand associated to it in terms of the certainty of the Bed Bath & Kitchen. There's 25,000 property managers in the US, and everyone's trying to grow their local brands, which is great. From a guest perspective, I think it just gets really confusing because there's 25,000 people trying to market to these guests. And that's why there's this huge over-reliance on OTAs. As a vacation rental industry, 70% of our bookings come from an OTA versus the hotel industry, it's 15 to 20%. And that's very costly. It's costly from a commission structure perspective. It's costly from you don't have direct communications with your guests and you lose the brand visibility. So I think there's a mix here of, I think the vacation rental, my thesis is the vacation rental industry really needs to look at the hotel industry and the way it's structured with the owners, the property managers that are executing the service at the local level, the brands, and then you've got the distribution through the OTAs. And historically, what we've seen in the last 10, 15 years or 20 years is property managers that have tried to create national brands, but property management to me is a very local service. That's where you have the hospitality, and scaling this local service is very hard to do nationally. So I think that structurally we need to be more structured like the hotel industry.
So I've got a question. I want Ashley, could you say those numbers again about the OTAs? Because I want everybody to make sure that they caught that. So vacation rentals.
69% of vacation rentals are booked through an OTA, like an Airbnb or Vrbo. And only 15 to 20% of hotels are booked through an OTA. The rest is direct.
If we talk about a competition between those two industries, we all just need to recognize how much money we are leaving on the table as a vacation rental industry. That is an insane stat. 70% versus 15 to 20% is an amazing difference. But my question comes back to where you've landed a couple of times, Ashley, is that you've got these hotels. They were able to, let's say it's 80s, 90s, whatever it is, they started to spread these national brands. But the benefit that they had was they had a national brand that could then spread. The vacation rental industry really doesn't have these national brands. So I don't disagree with your thesis. I think that the thesis of setting standards at a higher level, but then letting local operators operate and add that local flavor and manage things on the ground, that all makes sense to me. And in fact, Europe is a little bit closer to that than what the US is. But how do you think we take steps in that direction if we don't have the national brands to lead that way?
We're creating them. This is the beginning of our evolution, and we're creating them now. I really think it's the only way. If you look at all other service industries, if you look at hotels, restaurants, the national brand, they're all set up this way, where you have the national brand and you have the local property management that provides that local service and that hospitality. And I don't see any industry that's mature like ours is, combined, if you take online and offline vacation rentals, we're 31% of lodging spend. We're no longer a cottage industry. And I don't think we can scale if we continue to try to nationalize these 25,000 different property management groups. You look at Vacasa, you look at, if there's some industry veterans here with ResortQuest, it just hasn't worked. I haven't seen this work. And so I think that the structure of the industry is quite flawed. And this is where we have to have emergence of these national brands.
Are you seeing anyone step into that space?
Well, we have the 100 Collection at the luxury level. We're different, but I love what they're doing. You can see the Storied Collection is starting with the castles. But so there's different takes of it. That's all very exciting. But again, it's just to create more certainty and to you really elevate the guest experience and really highlight at the end of the day, it's highlighting these property managers that really do a fantastic job as local managers and highlighting them and making sure that the guest is aware that these great managers exist and they have existed for far longer than Airbnb. And how do we make sure that they're being highlighted as the professionals to stay with?
So here's the thought that as you were talking, sorry, so you are prompting us. Oh, I can see smiles on all of our faces ready to jump in. I figured if I got close enough to the camera, it would be
we're talking over each other bad today. It's not good, but that's a good thing. Go ahead, Scott.
Yeah, I know. So it's funny because when you were talking, actually, the thing that sat with me is, and it's around standards, is are the consumers being tricked that, oh, if it's on the OTA, it must be legit from a vacation rental perspective. So is that the marker? Because otherwise with the hotels, they look and go, yeah, not Motel 6. Yeah, not the roadside in Marriott. And then it's just, of course, yeah, I know that. I can trust it. It's right here. I don't have to go look elsewhere. I can just go right there because I know what I'm getting.
Those brands have meaning.
Yep.
To you as a guest, what you're going to get. You only have capacity to understand so many brands, right? But those brands have meaning to you and they're on the chain scale. Mm-hmm. Someone mentioned to me recently, oh, isn't the Costco domain doing this? But Costco's got so many different types of properties using them. So how do you need these brands to have meaning so that a guest has certainty that they know, okay, if they book this home, I'm going to get this type of product in the home. So I think it's really... And even these larger property managers that are managing 1,000+, they have sub-brands in there and they have their luxe assortment and whatnot. So we need to start helping the guests understand what they're going to walk into. And I think it starts with the say.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, sorry. I was gonna ask about that because Airbnb, I thought they'd killed this, but I guess it's still active, but it doesn't feel like it's as prominent as it once was, once Airbnb went categories. But there is Airbnb Lux, which is basically the remnants of Luxury Retreats, which was this brand that they acquired. I want to say this was like 2019, 2018. My dates may be off. Maybe we could fact check that and put that in the show notes. But this was a while ago where they bought this like really high-end listing site, basically. Then they integrated it. I'm putting that in air quotes for the listener. Integrated it into Airbnb Lux. And then I've had people that I've worked with in the past who went, yeah, we got invited to this Airbnb Lux program. We put our properties into it and our bookings went downhill. Like we actually didn't see as many. We actually had to call Airbnb and was like, yeah, can you remove us out of this Lux program? So it seems like even within Airbnb, in theory, you could see a $30 per night shared room listing. Next to, I just clicked on Lux and it showed me one that's $12.25 a night down in Isle of Palms if I want to get in my car and drive 2 hours away. So that's the problem too, right? Airbnb is this brand that's like this umbrella, but it's nothing like the hotels like you were describing earlier, because you go on the Marriott website, scroll to the bottom, and I see they even have like basically three different sections on the bottom of their website, all the different logos down there where it's like, yep, basically high, medium, low, high is like where you can actually see those things experienced. So even Airbnb can't exactly sort this.
Totally. And yeah. Lux is only 2% of hotel demands. That's really just like... very upper echelon. And so I think having the different brands or having the different chain scale is really important for our industry, because the majority of the people are looking for a mid-scale to an upper scale stay. That's 60% of hotel demand. And so how do you make it really easy for a consumer to book along that chain scale within the vacation rental space?
Yeah. Maybe Airbnb's logic. I've actually heard Brian Chesky talk about this on different podcasts, mm-hmm. is that he was alluding to the effect, or he was exploring the idea that we have enough supply. In many markets, we have enough supply. Sure, we want more, of course, we'll always take more. But he believes his problem is a matching problem, that I can only show you 10 listings at a time. So if you go to that page, Ashley, with your four kids and you're traveling with them, you're going to want something different than me and my wife are traveling to Italy next month, just, you know, her and I. So it's like, our outcome is going to be totally different, even if we both put Rome Italy into the Airbnb search box, or we put Rome Italy into the same whatever OTA platform that we're using, we're going to end up wanting different things. So it's like, how do I show you what you're after? Because Bed Bath filters can only take you so far, right? Like, maybe what you're after is not what I'm after, just based on size of property. It may be a location question. Mm-hmm. Going back to the actual thesis of this conversation, it may be a standards question. I'm willing to splurge. This is for our 10-year wedding anniversary. You know what? I'm going Luxe, even though I don't normally go Luxe. I'll play in that 2% just for a week, mm-hmm. even though I don't normally do it. And that makes it really challenging. So yeah, I can't imagine Airbnb would ever do that, would break apart their brands and have, I can't imagine going to airbnb.com/budget or airbnb.com/whatever. It seems like they're just pushing everything into the fold and then hoping that you figure it out along the way. But you nailed it earlier too, Ashley, when you were talking about the fact that you go on the listing page. And in fact, some property managers I work with, I don't know if you've seen this too, Ashley, they'll be a property manager, but they position themselves on Airbnb like they're a host. They'll say it's not managed by Conrad School Cabin Rentals, but by Conrad. And they'll hide the fact almost a little bit that they are a property manager because they feel like they might not get the best placement in Airbnb from being a proud property manager, or they feel like maybe the guest is looking for that single host that really cares about the stay, and then maybe they've had a good experience before. So I don't know if you have any thoughts on those two ideas.
And Airbnb recently put out a study that 85% of booking or listings on Airbnb have 5-star reviews. It's impossible for the guests to understand what they're getting. Right. You can put two listings next to each other, and the only difference really is the price. You still don't know what you're walking into. So I don't think Airbnb is going to solve this. Their goal is to really maximize supply, and they don't want to create any friction. I think it's really up to the industry to others to really set those brand standards and make it really much more easier for guests to know what they're walking into.
Every like Jamie Lane AirDNA graphic, I always just like, I have to look at it for a minute. It always takes me a second to be like, wow. Like the one that really hit me a while ago was he showed churned listings. So like how long a listing had been active on Airbnb. And there was like cohorts by, I think it was by year if memory serves correctly. And it was wild how many listings have churned from the platform. Sure, they have all these listings, but millions have come on and come off, right? And we just never see it. So they do have this doggy dog mentality Airbnb does, where it's like, we're trying to attract everything. And then if it doesn't meet our standards, you get a few 4-star reviews, poof, you're gone. But it's, and Tiana's talked about this in our show too, the 4-star review may have been fine for someone else. Maybe you would have rated it 5 stars, I would have rated 3 stars, the average is going to be 4 and boom, you're off the platform. But it's like, it's standards. And it's expectations too. I think that's the backside of standards is, what did I expect? Yeah.
I could have a 5-star Econo Lodge stay and I could have a 3-star Ritz-Carlton stay. It's just, what are your expectations going in there and knowing, are they achieving those expectations?
Yeah. So if I see the rat walk across the floor at the Econo Lodge, I'm like, yeah, I deserve that. Yeah. If I see the Four Seasons or the Ritz, I'm just like, what in the world is going on? But no, Adam, I was going to go your direction because in the notes here, we had this idea that the industry can scale and the industry can explode. That was Ashley's note, but you added some emphasis on it. Have we talked about things today that can help us? We've said some of the problems, but if we solve some of these problems, how would it bring more people into our fold? And how would people automatically choose our industry over the hotel industry? I don't know if you have any thoughts so far based on what we've chatted about.
I do want to double down on the reviews being an issue. I think that this industry cannot be built on reviews. And the fact that if you don't have a 4.5-star above, then you're just not going to be viewed in the algorithm and people aren't going to want to stay at your property. That is a pointless way to do property search. It's like Uber, you're not going to get anybody who's less than 4.5 stars. What's the use of having the 3 stars before that if that's the case? Like this, the review system is totally broken. It's totally skewed towards the guest and not the host. And I'm all for how do we fix this as quickly as we can. I still am sitting in this camp about next steps. Now, I think Ashley has given me clarity in a number of areas. And one of those is, which is super exciting to me, is we are at the beginning of the revolution where we will have to have a national brand, multiple national brands that set some standards. And then below that should cascade all of the managers, local managers, who will then execute on the local communities, execute on those standards, and provide the great guest and homeowner experiences. Getting to that, that's the chasm where I'm stuck, is how do we get from where we are today to getting those national brands? Because I don't see that happening right now. And in Europe, I mentioned Europe is closer to this. Sykes, you look at Sykes, and I forget their full name, but in Europe, they've got whatever, 70,000, 100,000 listings. The reality is that the majority of those are just listings where they're the marketing partner. And I don't know that they've taken it to the standard size. I think that they might just be leveraging their name from a marketing perspective. Hey, you can list on our website type of thing. But you could see that's the start of, hey, we've got this large brand who can then push down some standards on the people that want to be a part of that. We don't have anything even remotely close to that in the United States. Yes, I agree. 100 Collection is taking a step towards that, but they're not, to your point, Ashley, they're at that 1%. They're not thinking about the 60% in the middle. Same thing with Storied. And now you've got the challenge of the investment money that's coming into this industry has followed the flawed plan time and again. Resort Quest, Vacasa, Turnkey. It's just same plan. Hey, let's go become the managers at all these local places. Clearly that's flawed. Ashley has reiterated that. But how do we jump, and who invests? How do we jump to, hey, look, I'm not trying to manage. All I want to do is tell you guys how to run your business, whether that's standards, operations, whatever it is. That to me seems like a large chasm to jump. I want to help jump it. I want to do it. I want to be a part of it. I'm just getting lost in the middle of how do we execute that?
Well, one thing I was going to say, Adam, you should explain too for the listener maybe who knows this, but it's not happening as much today as it was 2 years ago. How did Vacasa get all the units? How many of them happened through acquisition? Because they went through a 24-month period where they were buying. Like I had clients that I worked with where it's like they sneezed and Vacasa was there with the tissue. Like, hey, did you want to sell, by the way?
I think that was the time, right? I think if you, hindsight's 2020, but if you were to look back, I think that had a lot to do with, one, the investment capital. Money was easy for a long time. And then money was even more easy within the vacation rental space because we were growing and the industry was starting to get all of this outside interest. And then on top of that, you have a COVID boom. It's like this perfect storm for people just writing checks and handing them over. But that's not to say that it hasn't happened before. Resort Quest did the same thing. They bought up all these companies. They failed a number of times. They ended up giving the companies back. In fact, Wyndham came out of that. Wyndham Vacation Rental Management came out of the Resort Quest fall. And then Vacasa picked up all the Wyndham inventory. So the reality is we're actually just handing the same inventory from one flawed plan to the next time and time again. The fact that investors with all this money who are super smart and educated can't take a step back and look at that and say, hey, maybe we shouldn't keep putting the same money in the same pockets doing the same thing. That's surprising to me. But at the same time, I think we're at the end of that. I don't think you're going to get large investment dollars to go down the same plan time and again, at least not in the near future. Maybe they'll be fooled again in 10 years. But I think this is our 10-year opportunity, to Ashley's point, create these national brands that can create these standards. I'm still stuck in how to execute.
Yeah, maybe spend on that.
Yeah, one point on Vacasa, they have 44,000 listings or had at some point 44,000 listings at the high point. That's only 2.5% of total U.S. listings. So still trying to build this national brand, but it's really hard to do when you only have 2.5% of the supply. And so what we're doing, we have worked with a lot of property managers over the last 2 years to set their standards and make them really easy to maintain and whatnot. And it's working with those professional property managers and working with them to show them the benefits of potentially building this national brand together. And then just, it's going to be a slow evolution, but it's a starting point and jumping off point with our existing customer base.
Ashley, is there somewhere we can find out who the partners are that you're bringing in? Who are those existing vacation rental managers that are starting to see it? Because I think that's what we want to promote, is this group sees these standards and let's keep driving people towards that group.
Yeah, let me get their permission and I can put some names out there. But there's some.
Even if it's just a landing page, to your point, Ashley, someplace where we can all start encouraging people. Mm-hmm. Hey, this is a group of people who are looked at focused on improving these standards and setting these standards. We'd be happy to continue to push people in that direction. Now, that's not the solution, to your point. This is just the first step. And I appreciate the way you said that. This is an evolution and this is just the first step in this evolution. But I do think the faster we move, the better for everybody.
Exactly. The hotels didn't get here overnight. It was a complete evolution over 20 years. So we're at the start of it. We're at this great inflection point and it needs to happen. And we can all work together to make this happen as an industry.
Adam's just a go-go kind of guy. So if you give him a problem, he wants to knock that problem down.
Yeah, correct. You can get a sense that my wife probably doesn't like it as much as you know.
Let's do it. Let's figure it out. No, I like that. Awesome, Ashley. I think we have a handful more minutes left with you. We appreciate you hopping on and being a little flexible to time and all that kind of stuff, because it's been a great chat so far. A bit of a different perspective in my mind too, which is always good. Of course, my brain always goes back to marketing. And I think, how can we do all this great work when you're doing this hard work and you really are taking these high standards and putting them into play? Your cost structure may go up. Maybe you have to charge more for that property, back to your earlier commentary about driving higher ADRs and things like that. But it's like, how do we explain that to the guest? How do I position that properly? How can I show them in one photo, or how can I show them in one bit of copy or something on the page when they get there and they go, oh, wow, I can really trust this company. They know what they're doing. A lot of people have tried. I don't know if anyone's really figured it out yet. And I don't know if I have either, by the way. I'm not saying I have the magic answer. So these are unanswered problems, but it means that there's probably some good money to be having solving them. So that's a good thing, I think, for people like us as well on the vendor side. But yeah, I think we talked about this before we hit record, Ashley. We're also trying to grow the podcast and get more people to talk about fun problems in the industry and fun things happening on the hospitality side of things. Is there anyone that comes to mind for you that could be a good future potential guest for us here on the podcast on Art of Hospitality?
Yeah. Have you guys had Catherine Radcliffe on the podcast yet?
Just did. Yeah.
Oh, you did. Oh, yeah. Man. Okay. She was my number one pick for the podcast.
I'm going to tell her that, though. She's gonna like that you said. That's going to make her smile.
It could be someone like Seth Burgo at Skift okay. Research. That could be really interesting. I think he has a similar take just in terms of his research, and he's studied the hotel industry, and I think he wrote the entire oral history of the vacation rental industry. So he's very clear on how the hotel industry has scaled, and I think he could be a really interesting guest on this podcast.
Nice. Mm-hmm. I do read putting a Skift stuff, but we haven't taken a swing, I don't think, Adam, yet at a Skift writer or content kind of person over there, but that'd be a fun one. I like that, Ashley. Thank you for being on your feet quickly on that one, because your first option got taken. It's I don't know if you play fantasy football, Ashley, but it was like you had your top pick overall. You were trying to go get Christian McCaffrey, and then all of a sudden someone took him before you, and then you're scrambling. So that's a weird analogy, but it makes sense in my mind, at least. Anything else, Scott and Adam, for us to take a swing on here, Ashley, before we let her go for today?
This was absolutely incredible. Ashley, we're so glad you reached out. I'm really glad you reached out. This was awesome. Really awesome.
Yeah, let's continue the conversation. Let's make this happen.
Awesome. Thank you, Ashley. We appreciate you popping on here. People have standards about the podcast they listen to, too. I don't know if you know this, Ashley. And one standard that we're hoping for that 5-star review. Like Adam was saying earlier, we don't want any 1-star or 2-star or 3-star. We want a 5-star. And hopefully the topic today was good enough. So if you go to your podcast app of choice, again, Apple Podcasts and Spotify is where we get the most downloads. So if you're listening in one of those platforms, go to your app of choice, click 5 stars, nothing less than that. We appreciate that greatly. It'll be a standard that would make us smile and give us some more listeners at the show. So we thank you, and we'll catch you on the next episode of Art of Hospitality. Thanks so much.